So here we are again talking about yet another brutal, gruesome death at the hands of another human being, and unfortunately the death of a woman at the hands of a man. And if you look at the stats in the last 20 years, 286 women have died violently in the Republic of Ireland. 63% of them were killed in their own home. 9 out of 10 of those women knew their killer, and over half of those were killed by a partner or an ex-partner. You know, you look at the stats then for last year, where 7 women died violently in the Republic of Ireland. We have already passed that statistic, and all of those are names, actually. They're not a statistic as such, because if 7 women died violently last year, 7 women have died violently up to July of this year. So by the time we get out of 2026, the number will be very, very high. And they are not just statistics. They're people like Scarlett Faulkner, Masumi Sarabi, Amy Doherty, Ellie Flanagan, Linda Costello, Mileno Ostjuk, and Yvetta Donilova. They all have names, and they all have lives, and they all have families mourning them. I spoke in the past with Mary Louise Lynch from CICI. This is Survivors Informing Services and Institutions. She joins me again this morning to discuss yet another one of these tragedies. Mary Louise, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
They're not statistics, they're names. They have lives and loved ones who mourn them, right?
Absolutely. And there are women's lives that were cut short. You know, women, through whether it be through ongoing violence or, you know, that fatal act of femicide, women are being denied the opportunity to live safely in this world and to fulfill their potential. And it's a terrifying example that is being set for young women growing up in that environment, you know, where women can be so openly hated, victimized, and, you know, too often, 8 times this year, fatally killed. You know, it really is.
Jamie Carney being the 8th. Yeah, Jamie Carney being the 8th. Why are the numbers increasing if there's more and more awareness now and more alert and possibly trying to tell people, you know, to live quiet, calm, happy, loving lives? But it's getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can't answer that question, you know, with when you look at the intersecting factors. You know, some people, you know, in the international protection system, you know, people who are displaced. I do think one thing that is quite prominent in most cases where women are killed, you know, at the end of a reign of terror that's been inflicted through coercive control. And that is the isolation of victims. So systematically, a woman's place in her community is eroded. Her sense of confidence in going out to work or pursuing a career or an education, her belief in herself as a capable mother or a valuable human being, because coercive control erodes that over time, and the most prominent place that the perpetrator lives is in the mind of the victim. That stops her from being able to articulate what's happening, sometimes before it's too late, or even when she does articulate what's happening, because of the nature of our structures and the responses that are there, women often go back because it's safer. So while we don't know the details of the relationship history, unfortunately, we don't know those details when it comes to the women who have been killed most recently, and indeed the women who are in the women's aid census. While we do have some basic facts, because we don't have domestic homicide reviews, we can't see the pattern of behaviour, isolation, the grooming, how it happened, you know, whether those victims were removed from family and friends, whether, you know, she was almost leading a secret life, you know, pretending that things were okay on the outside and then, you know, living on a knife edge behind closed doors.
Mm. Oh, things will get better. I can change him. I'll make this work. Yeah, yeah.
Or if I leave, he might kill me. And you know, sometimes it's at a subconscious level. But that is the overriding fear when it comes to coercive control, is that I might be killed. And if I'm not killed, maybe my children will be, or he will use the children to harm me. So it's safer for everyone if I stay where I can see him.
A couple of things I want to just chat to you about a little, because I see a court report this morning of a man who punched, headbutted, choked his partner. She was unconscious. She thought she was going to die. She had extensive bruising all over the body. I covered this at length this morning. The point I want to put to you is, when a case like this comes before the court and a man is found guilty, is it acceptable that the sentence should be as low as 2 years with the final 9 months suspended? Is that doing justice and respect to the victim, I'm curious?
Absolutely not. And I think because we don't have gender-specific legislation, okay, that recognises violence against women as, you know, as a crime that is specifically aimed at and targeted at a woman because it's easier to get away with, you know, it's easier to use that brute force against a woman than it is to go out and do that on the street, you know, and somehow psychologically, I think almost people kind of identify with having some sympathy that, oh, we can see how these things happen in a relationship, as opposed to this is completely unacceptable behaviour in a relationship. It is, you know, if somebody has that inside them, then they're not safe to be in a relationship.
So a sentence like that really is kind of almost acknowledging trivialisation.
Absolutely.
That's appalling.
And mitigating, you know, circumstances as opposed to the relationship being the aggravating factor. The fact that there was trust, if this happens to somebody who is in a, you know, if a partner does this to the person they say they love or are supposed to love, or the victim believes that they are, you know, in a sincere relationship with somebody, and that trust is eroded through the systematic, you know, control, manipulation, and the escalation that results in violence, that has to be an aggravating factor, and it should always be viewed as such. Now, while we do have provision for that in law, it's not necessarily always how judges see it, you know, when it comes before them in court.
You should throw the book at them.
Sometimes their hands are tied when it comes to sentencing. You know, it depends on...
But I'm just curious, because if it's 2 years, let it even be the 2 years, not 2 years, 9 months suspended. I'd throw the book at them.
Absolutely. And there should also be perpetrator, you know, intervention programs, post-release, the Probation Act for years, because, you know, the idea that somebody has that inside them when it comes to being in a relationship, and then they go out, leave prison, and just move on to the next victim. I mean, we see it all the time where prisoners actually get involved in new relationships with pen pals. You know, people come to visit them. So the grooming quite often happens even from behind bars. That behaviour absolutely needs to be brought out into the sunlight. You know, we need to look at that systematic grooming and using women for a roof over, you know, someone's head, get the washing done, have the dinner on the table kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, that mindset that move on from one victim to the next so that creature comforts are taken care of and general entitlements are taken care of. I mean, it's appalling to think that anyone would view another human being in that way.
Okay, it's an interesting. That's a very interesting point you make. Because the other question I wanted to put to you, and I don't know whether people involved in women's aid helplines and intervention, and there are many groups amongst them yours, are even comfortable in addressing one particular issue, and that is the value we put on women in society. The point I'm making is that I get a lot of contact from people listening to this program, and I see a lot of it, a lot of conversations like this online. With regards to, say, for instance, people who come to this country from other countries, where perhaps their view of women is not as good as maybe ours, the respect that we would have as a society here. And unfortunately, we don't have the statistics released to back up the amount of people who are killed or abused or beaten. In the case, of course, of Jamie Carney, you know, an individual from another country who's maybe their beliefs and their background, and they're indoctrinated differently as to how they treat women. Is that impacting on Ireland now? We don't have the statistics because they're not released, but I'm just curious, is that the reason why we're hearing of more deaths of women at the hands of say, for instance, foreign men?
Okay, first of all, I don't think so. And to go back to your very first question as to why this is happening, you know, there are so many intersectional reasons, okay? Trauma being one of them, but that displacement of women as well, where, you know, a woman is completely isolated from community. She might stay that bit longer, or leaving might trigger a more traumatic control response from the perpetrator, okay? That level of entitlement and the use of violence and force, okay, that is only used where control has been completely lost. And I don't agree that we have a better view of women by nature in Ireland. I mean, we only have to look at Ireland's history of the mother and baby homes, the Magdalen laundries. We only have to look at the history of sexual violence in this country and the hiding of it, okay? What I do think we have in Ireland is a very high rate of female suicide. And I also think that when coercive control lens is used, you know, and experts like Professor Jane Monckton Smith will highlight over and over the amount of hidden homicides. So we have women who die, and the idea that they were murdered might never even be looked at. A suicide or an accident might be accepted. Now, that comes at the end of a pattern of coercive control, which is predominantly what leads to most women being killed at the end of a relationship. Okay, and if you look at, maybe let's just take for an example, a woman has fled a war-torn country and come here for protection, and an abusive partner has either come with her or followed her, or her safety relies on the fact that she is married and her visa is tied to him.
She's stuck.
And trying to leave him when she comes to Ireland is terrifying. You've got language barriers. You have trying to find financial support, trying to find housing, education for children. You know, you will have social work with eyes on you. You know, you've got different cultural barriers, all of that. So there are so many reasons why a woman might stay to the point of being killed if she has come to Ireland from another country.
But you would dismiss a text that would say letting unvetted rapists or murderers into this country and wander free, our open border policy, this is the result of it. Shame on our government. We know of this individual we know now that he has fled the country. He's a person of interest. Clearly, he wouldn't have fled if he wasn't responsible for Jamie's death. I don't know whether you're aware now, he actually managed to get out of the country and he is now somewhere in Turkey. He was in an IPAS centre in Killarney.
Yeah. And I missed the section earlier with you talking to Ralph Regal. I just heard the clip on the news. Like, so he has gone on the run. But there's there was a young woman who died in Monaghan violently. And it was presumed an accidental death. It was put down to Kelly, I can't think of her second name now, Kelly Lynch. The guards responded to that she had, gone out socialising and fallen into, the river. She had something like 62 injuries all over her body. She had gone to support her boyfriend in a time of grief. And while we don't have all the details of that case, there's a young Irish woman who went to do the right thing. We don't know the nature of the relationship between her and her boyfriend. We don't know whether it was over and she went to support him out of feeling, guilt or compassion or empathy for him. And how did those 62 injuries get there before she may have finally died from drowning? I mean, obviously, an inquiry will reveal that. We have to take Alan Hall for an example, okay, who premeditated the murder of his entire family because he knew somewhere that the jig was up. Now, he was a pillar of the community and every excuse was made for a premeditated murder. And I think possibly some of the killings that we're talking about might not necessarily have been a calculated, premeditated murder. They might be an escalation of abuse dynamics that have happened in the context of any number of added adversities. Or a woman might have stayed because she had no way of getting out. Claude de Haut, in her mind, wanted to leave. She had discussed it, but getting away from him with the children was insurmountable for her. Mm. And her family weren't that far away. But she was so isolated from revealing the truth to them because he followed her everywhere she went. She never had a chance to speak about the truth of what was going on. She was always afraid of him. And I think that has to be understood in context. It's very easy to say, you know, you see a name that doesn't look like a traditional Irish name and then automatically write the story.
No, and I'm not doing that. I'm just, if I take the eight from last year, the tragic deaths, two of which we don't know the names of the killers for legal reasons, but it leaves us with six women who died. And of the six who were murdered, three of the murderers had names like Marvinek and Ostjek and Sorabi. That's 50% of sections of society that would be a lot less by virtue of the section of the population from where they came from. I mean, you know, their percentage of the population in Ireland with foreign names would be tiny, but yet we have 50% of the names in a list of six murders last year are foreigners.
Okay, so if we look at it just as murder, you're talking about the killing of women, okay? And that is those women are killed because they were women, okay? They're not being killed because, you know, they're just a person walking down the street, or they got caught up in a mugging, or, you know, a robbery went wrong. These are women who are being killed because they are being viewed as, in some way, property of men. But you also have to put the context in which they are living, okay? The international protection system is a highly controlled and monitored environment, okay, where it would nearly be impossible to get out and have an appointment with a domestic violence service. You have language barriers. You have financial constraints. It would be impossible to save money to get away from a perpetrator. Look at the refuges, the women, or the Safe Ireland census last week. You know, there were 10 places overall in Ireland available. The refuges were...
I think there were 8,500 beds short for an entire year of women who needed intervention, 8,500.
Yeah. So, and then you have to look at the criteria for getting into refuge. And you have to look at our policies and our housing policies and whether someone will be told, no, you have to stay in the IPAS centre, or when you leave the refuge. And I've seen this. I've worked in refuge where a woman comes into refuge and she leaves refuge and has to go back into the international protection system.
Yeah.
So it's a tiny community. So, you know, going into where people are warehoused, that's not giving anybody the freedom that they need to recover from being, you know, in a long-term controlling and abusive relationship. It's not giving them the space they need. It's not giving them the safety around their children. And if somebody has come here and they have young children, their future and providing for them is going to be the most important thing on their minds. For a perpetrator losing control of the woman of the house and losing control of access to children. And let's not forget, if somebody is prone to the use of violence, there are many ways of abusing somebody, and the pattern is always there. And again, to repeat my point, because we don't have domestic homicide reviews and we're not looking at the history of the perpetrator, their history in relationships, we're not looking at the history of their relationship with the person that they killed from the outset, we're looking at it as a murder rather than a femicide. And best practice is we look at femicide, the killing of a woman because she is a woman.
Yeah.
And if that happened in the context of a domestic violence or a controlling relationship, then you look at the pattern and you see that it is premeditated. And that's how we introduce prevention strategies. That's how we respond differently when a woman comes forward. And there's great things have happened recently. I mean, now, you know, a woman is going to be able to move county and not lose her place on the housing list, which is absolutely essential to flee a perpetrator. Or imagine if you're living with, with the perpetrator, surrounded by the perpetrator's family. Even getting him out of the house is not going to help because you're still completely controlled, eyes on you the whole time. Mm. And the same thing happens in the IPAS centres.
Yeah, but if you had if you did have IPAS centres, for instance, where unvetted men couldn't come into the country, where we don't know where they're from, they're undocumented, and we don't know their past or their history, wouldn't that help a lot? Where they're just returned? I mean, hey, dwelling on this point, but this guy spent time in France. So what was he doing coming from France and being accepted into the Irish IPAS centre system? You know, I mean, that maybe isn't a question for you, but it certainly strikes me as an important point. You know.
And we also have, highly regarded professional men, both coming here from other countries and highly regarded professional men who are born and reared here, who are committing the most atrocious acts. And we only have to look behind the in-camera rule or be allowed to look behind the in-camera rule and send somebody down to the family law courts to watch every day who is being absolutely tortured through guardianship, custody and access hearings. There's no one nationality that is responsible for that. However, lay litigants, people who have the money, people who know how to abuse the legal aid system, they can carry on that level of abuse indefinitely until children age out. Children's entire lives are being destroyed by growing up in the context of legal proceedings, and nobody's watching it. So it's, yes, when you see the end result of a murder actually happens, but we're not viewing it in the right context. We're not looking at the patterns. And in our last conversation, we spoke about the domestic homicide timeline. And what's playing out in family courts all over the country is between stages 6 and 8. Between stages 5 and 6. And what we're talking about here today is stage 8.
Yeah, death.
Yeah, the death itself. Mm. And we don't know the history of those families. We don't know, whether someone was hoping for a fresh start. Like so many people believe, a new start in a new country, maybe the violence will stop. And think about how many Irish families have gone to America, Australia, Canada, believing the same thing. Maybe he will be better when he's not, on the jar. Maybe he'll be better if he gets a better job, if he feels better about himself. Maybe he'll treat me better if he's, doesn't feel so self-conscious about, being the family he was raised with. Mm. Whatever it is, whatever excuse is used to justify the violence, people always hope for something to work out better in the end, because underneath they know that this person has the potential to kill them. Mm. And if I leave, that's what will trigger it.
Yeah. We'll chat again. For sure we will, unfortunately and sadly, probably when the next tragic death. Mary Louise, thanks so much for taking the call for now. Mary Louise Lynch, founder and director of CC, and you can call Women's Aid Helpline at 1-800-341, 1-800-341. I see a lot of texts coming in on this, and I'm going to pick up on the texts and your thoughts. Text 0868 104 106 after the break.